Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome into Tom Curran's Patriots Talk podcast. I am Tom Curran, as always, joined by the Senator Phil Perry. We have a standout pod lined up for you today. Do we reconfigure all expectations based upon what Cam Newton is doing so far? And it's a little bit historic. Is it time to start shopping for the engagement ring for Cam? Why them wideouts look so good? Also, Phil and his report card will tell you what the Patriots' defense was dealing with the other night. We got Rick Stroud for a Tampa Bay Buccaneer check-in. And you better mask up if you're on an NFL sideline, mister, or you're going to be a little late in the wallet. All that moron. All right, Phil, look at that microphone. Folks who are just listening, which many of you do to a podcast, but those of you viewing on YouTube can see it, but Phil has just, looks like a magic eight ball sized microphone head.
This thing is heavy duty. I have no idea how it sounds because I can't hear myself in my own ear, but hopefully it's making some sort of difference here. We've all gotten so used to Zoom. I think occasionally if you can up the quality of the audio, it's like a nice little, it's like ear candy for the people.
Do me a solid. Move your head back 4 inches and talk again.
How are we doing now? We feeling better now? Do we like this better?
Yeah,
talking
I think you were talking Edelman.
No?
No, I think it's good. You were a little tight. We had a little reverb, I guess, is what we would call it. But
a little hot, maybe. Okay. I'll play it right here. I'll try to stay
We're not about quality, though. We're about content, folks.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
We're not about the, so let's get right into it. Cam Newton on Sunday night lit it up through the air. And the wide receivers, among them, Julian Edelman, N'Keal Harry, Damir Bird, each of them either had a career high in targets, yards, or catches. Edelman with a career high in yards, and N'Keal Harry with a career high in all three categories. Meanwhile, Newton had the most rushing attempts by a quarterback through the first two games of the season in NFL history.
Wow.
26 carries in the first two games, previous high 2015 when Cam Newton had 24 and was an MVP. Finally, Cam, the first quarterback to have 500 plus passing yards and 4 plus rushing touchdowns through the first 2 weeks of a season. Phil, your buddy over here said 8-8. You and I both throughout the summer used every single caveat and qualifier we could when discussing the fortunes of the Patriots. And the number one was if Cam is healthy. Well, Cam is healthy, but he's exceeding every single expectation that I had for what he would be. Do we have to reconfigure expectations for everything, or is it still, whoa, sample size too small?
I think we do have to reconfigure our expectations to a certain extent because there have been these little milestones in Cam Newton's short tenure with the Patriots, right, where I think in training camp we saw that he was healthy. There were certain things that he was doing, both with his legs and his arms, that we said, okay, this actually looks like something. That was an important box that needed to be checked before the season. Then week one, we're looking at it and saying, man, this offense can change on the fly. Less than 2 months with this guy, and they're looking really effective. We have no idea if they can pass, but that running game part of it, at least, we know can work. There's another box checked. And now in week two, Tom, I think maybe the most important box after Cam Newton's health, the fact that they can actually throw the football in a league where that is critical, and you need to be doing that regardless of how athletic your quarterback is, we can check that box as well, because I wasn't sure he would be able to do that the way he did. I wasn't sure the group around him would be able to perform the way that it did. not only is he healthy, Tom, and is the arm strong, but he was accurate to all levels for the most part. It looks like he's getting through his progressions relatively quickly. He is miles ahead. We said this the night of the game, but he is individually miles ahead of where I thought he would be.
I don't even know where to start with what's the biggest surprise. And you hate to cover a football team in the NFL for 23 years in my case, or 11 or so in your case, and to really work hard at it and to pay attention. And then to have shit happen that you just didn't expect. Now I can say too, look, I don't feel as bad as the guys who were getting paid by NFL teams to scout and they didn't sign the guy, but I still hate being caught pants around ankles as to what's going to happen. And that's what's going on, brah. So with Newton.
But here's the thing, Tom. I mean, I think even Newton himself would tell you that he didn't know how it was going to go. There were many times, whether it was before the season started, where we asked about his health, and he basically said, well, it was a long time between now and the start of the season. Yeah, anything could happen. Like, he wasn't sure about even whether or not he would be ready to go physically week one. We saw the video with Odell Beckham this offseason where he said, I know I haven't put out great tape the last couple of years. There was a lot of doubt in his mind. So I think even to him, not that this is a surprise, not that this has caught him off guard, but I'm not sure he would have predicted this kind of efficiency this early had you asked him a couple weeks ago.
Is a large part of this still because of the newness? We talked about that after the Miami game, but we haven't talked about it much since the Seattle game. You unveil this new toy and the Patriots are using it and everyone is looking and saying, well, okay, so that's how they're going to use him in the running game. Now they hadn't seen how he would be used in the passing game. Now they have to reconfigure their expectations for what Damir Byrd can do and N'Keal Harry can do. They knew what Edelman could do, but now you can't devote extra players to Julian Edelman. I mean, that's the thing. The entire thing, if it really came down to it, what's different? The math. The math is different from Tom Brady to Cam Newton. You can't put as many people back in coverage and just realize you can stop the running game with five humans or six humans because the running game and the running threat is different. And Julian Edelman is finding opportunities. It looked like it did against the freaking – there were times when you watched it, and Phil, I know you do that when you do your report card. It looked like the Rams Super Bowl in 2018 where Julian's just scooting along with no one around him against Seattle because the defense had to be different. In that Super Bowl, yeah, it was Brady, but the running game was so freaking potent you had to commit people. Phil, last thing I'll say real quick because I found this interesting. There were 33 targets – on Sunday to wide receivers. I haven't gone all the way back through Brady's career. And I only got into about 2016. I picked a few select games where I knew they threw a lot. Tom Brady threw 38 times in overtime trying to come back against the Atlanta Falcons in 2016, the Super Bowl. 38 targets in an overtime game where they were down 28-3. 33 by regular course of action Sunday night for Cam Newton. Thank you. Now you.
They played about 100 snaps in that game too, offensively, yeah, in that Super Bowl. I mean, that is unbelievable. Yes. When you compare those two, I think the fact that Cam Newton has shown the confidence that he has shown in this receiver group beyond Julian Edelman is one of the reasons why we couldn't have predicted this, because no one would have been, based on what we had seen thus far from guys like Damir Byrd and N'Keal Harry, who would be all that confident in these guys. And yet there's Cam Newton throwing to N'Keal Harry on 4th-and-3. There's Cam Newton throwing to N'Keal Harry to get them down to the goal line for potential game winning play. There he is going to Damir Byrd, throwing it before Damir Byrd is even out of his break, Tom, as he's going to the sideline on a deep out. These are things that we're not accustomed to seeing with players not named Julian Edelman. And even when you look at Edelman's usage, Tom.
Yep.
How many times have we seen Julian Edelman be targeted that often, that deep down the field? Right? You saw time and again. And this is where some of the soft spots are in the Seattle-style cover three defense. And we're going to see it again. This is one of the most popular defenses now across the NFL. But we know the running backs. We talked about this before the game. The running backs tend to feast on that because you can push the DBs down the field. You have that soft underbelly of the defense. You also have this soft spot that's sort of in the seam area. And instead of allowing Julian Edelman to work that underneath part of the field, they just sent him deep. They tried to get the deep safety to go with Damir Bird, and it happened on one occasion, a 33-yarder deep down the middle of the field. But he was one-on-one with Jamal Adams multiple times, and Cam Newton is putting it to a spot where only Edelman can get him. And the guy is on one leg, it looks like, Tom. And he's beating one of the best defensive backs down the field for explosive plays. So if Edelman can be used a little bit differently, if these receivers can continue to earn the trust that Cam Newton has already shown in them, this passing game is going to be better than we thought it would be 2 weeks ago.
It's so funny because, you know, you're watching the game, and we do have a tendency, obviously, to look at things and compare. I'm watching Damir Bird, and I know I'm going to feel this way in week 13, even if he doesn't catch a whole shit ton of balls. He's better than Philip Dorsett. It's just Philip Dorsett could do a few things like glue hands on contested catches and acrobatic, but I like Damir Bird's game in the Patriots offense much better.
I think he's got a little bit more stop-start to him.
Oh, yes, yeah, suddenness. And
I think that's what it is.
He was a glider. Glider. I hate my L's.
I think when you look at how he's going to be used, you can use him to, whether it's just try to run off a corner in a zone defense, which he did at times the other night. You can do that, but you can also play off of that. And I don't think he's just a two-route guy. I don't want to limit him to that. But he can run those comeback routes pretty effectively, which we never saw Philip Dorsett do all that often. It was typically down the field. Sometimes it was – Philip Dorsett made some great catches, and he had a great catch percentage a couple of years ago for the Patriots. But I think you could just use Damir Bird a little bit differently in terms of the variety of routes that you can send him on.
It's interesting, too, because we saw the comeback eventually get sat on and a pick. There could have been another pick on that. So, I mean, we can look at the Seattle game and celebrate it for what it was because it's something we didn't expect, but we should also be able to look at some of the details, i.e. a would-be pick six by Dunbar that wasn't made and a 7-0 start that the Patriots had. And they still had to come back in that game to get back into the game. So I'm that's an aside. But there will be a move at some point where Bird releases and he's going to be – they either react to it with their safeties and Seattle's playing a cover three, or they don't and Damir Bird scores from 67 yards out.
Well, I thought you might get at some point, especially after Dunbar had shown that he was just sitting on that comeback route, that you might get a stop and go at some point. And those are the types of routes – and Damir Bird's a type of receiver who benefit from this too. But those are the types of routes, those double moves that take a little bit longer to develop, that your offensive line should allow you to try, at least try, to execute. Because the offensive line, Tom, has been good. I mean, when you look at, and I understand Seattle has zero ability to generate pressure outside of just bringing extra bodies. They have no pass rushers to win one-on-one. In Miami, we could end up looking at Miami the same way here, unless Kyle Van Noy suddenly turns it on. But through two games, this offensive line has been great. I mean, Cam Newton has had time, and when he hasn't had time, he's been able to buy himself time. So you might be able to see, as we get deeper into the season here, more of these longer routes develop, and that should help Bird. It should help N'Keal Harry, who's not going to suddenly separate deep down the field all by his lonesome. And it's already helped Julian Edelman, too, because, again, the guy's not running a 4-4 anymore, but he's still catching passes for 49 yards, 33 yards, 26 yards, and they need that sort of stuff to be able to just be more efficient. It's too hard to go 12 plays down the field every time, Tom, the way they did in Miami.
Well, something that I noticed right away during training camp with Cam's anticipation for where a receiver is going to intersect with the football. And that to me has been really, you saw it with Edelman. You saw it on the sideline throws, two different ones, and you saw it on the deep throw. Brady was an accurate pinpoint guy who basically was throwing strikes. And I think that Cam is, this is a bad comp, but this is the extreme that I'll use, more of a Pennington. I'm not saying he's not strike this Pennington. He throws the shit out of the ball, as we saw on the goal line throw. But he's got excellent anticipation when that is the throw that the quote-unquote throwing a guy open play. I think Cam's good at that. What, you got a finger wag? What do you got?
Pennington's your guy. Oh, that is high praise. Remind the people how much you like Chad Pennington.
Yeah, this is in 2008. Look, I got an MVP vote. I'm happy about it. Chad Pennington went from the Jets to the Miami Dolphins, and I gave him an MVP vote because that team went 11-5 with Chad Pennington and unseated the Patriots in the AFC East. So that's he was, to me, what you the epitome of a valuable player was that year. Plus, that was a shit year in the NFL. Oh, wait. And Bill Belichick backed me up on that once. We're talking on the side. Yeah, we suck this year.
I just wanted people to know that that was not – people might have perceived that as slander.
No. But
no, this is Chad Pennington's number one fan, maybe, outside of the Pennington family.
Yeah. I saw him at the owners' meetings this year, or last year, not this year. And I was kind of starstruck. And I went right over. Hey, Chad, Tom Curran, Boston. I just got to tell you.
Guys covered Tom Brady for 20 years. He's starstruck by Chad Pennington.
Yeah, he's like sipping a smoothie, looking at me like, what's going to happen next? I'm your biggest fan.
This weirdo. Is he working in the league right now?
I can't remember what he was doing. He worked in some place, but he was a really good guy. Hey, you guys jumped in on Twitter because before Quickslants, I sent out an observation about the wideouts. And I just want to read some of the feedback because I appreciate you guys. And while this is the Tom Curran Patriots Talk podcast, so that people can search for Patriots Pods and find the word Patriot in it, as opposed to Quickslants, the podcast as it used to be, we still are affiliated with the program. But here's some of the answers, which I thought were real good to the Twitter appeal for comments. The first one was from SPG, Pudgefisk27, says Cam freewheels more and Tom wanted them at a spot at an exact moment. Is that why? Another one from Matty D, I love TB more than anyone, but I think the entire offense needed a fresh look and a reset. Also, Dave Sullivan leads into something that I want to get to right now is, I think an extension slash pay raise could be on the horizon for number one if this play continues. So Cam Newton was asked about that when he made his appearance on the Greg Hill Show this week. And here's what his answer was when asked about an extension.
How do you feel as a player when you look around the league and you see guys, you know, making a lot more than you, when you look at your production versus their production?
That's surprisingly, but true and factual enough. If I do what I'm supposed to do, as I'm expecting to, that will not even be a topic of discussion here moving forward. And that's, like I said, you're talking to a person who, you know, money at this particular point in my career is not important, right? And let's be honest. Like, I've made money, you know, but for everything that I play this game for, I haven't received yet. And that's why I'm playing. So it's not about money. It's about respect. And when you, and especially going back to the negotiation table, when this opportunity presented itself, I didn't want to even keep going back and forth, you know, for this and that. And I said, listen, let's get the deal done. Let's do it. And for all it's worth, it's just going to pay dividends moving forward. And I do believe this. You know, a wise man once said that, and that wise man is my father. All blessings do not come in financial, you know, means. You know, just because, you know, you have money and do that, that, you know, blessings comes in many different forms than that, financial compensation. So, you know, for me, if I do what I'm supposed to do, you know, everything else will take care of itself.
Two games, just two, okay? Not one, not three. We got a couple of games. A deuce, a double, snake eyes. But is it time to at least start pricing the engagement ring for Cam?
I think an engagement ring is too strong, Tom, but maybe just an elaborate gift, I think would be nice. The commitment for multiple years beyond this one is something that I would certainly take my time with if I'm the Patriots, because we know Cam Newton's history. We know he's on the other side of 30. All it takes is one hit. And if you've committed tens of millions of dollars to this guy for multiple years and it turns out he's going to miss an extended period of time, not a great investment, especially when you're trying to build this team the way we've talked about. They're going to have to build it for the long term here.
One interjection too. If you start talking about it with him, is it Bus Cook is his guy?
I believe so.
You start calling Bus Cook after week two and then he gets hurt in week four. You're a real asshole if the calls stop coming. So wait it out. Sorry.
So I would say this. Why not guarantee his incentives? The incentives, Tom, only get him to $7+ million. And if you can guarantee those, he's still only making Marcus Mariota money, who's a backup in Vegas. He's actually coming to Foxborough this week. But to me right now, where he's being paid and he's guaranteed just over $1 million, I mean, you look at the guys that he is lumped in with when it comes to quarterback pay this year. You're talking about your Jeff Driscolls and your Colt McCoys and your Matt Schaubs. Yes, he's still in the league. And he's making more, I believe, guaranteed than Cam Newton is this year, Matt Barkley. So right now, and thankfully for the Patriots, he's not pushing for this, it sounds like, based on what he told the radio today. But right now, the amount he's being paid is so low, Tom, that I think it almost would make it hard for you to make an in-season move to acquire a piece. Because say – we've talked about Allen Robinson on the shows, I think on the pod as well. But say they do end up making a deal for a receiver, and then they end up paying that guy $16 million a year, and Cam Newton's sitting there making one. I mean, it's just – I think it does make roster building almost a little bit more complicated when your starting quarterback is making that little.
There is, and again, we do this. It is the polar opposite of what I like to do and hear sometimes on talk radio or on our shows, putting the wagon so far ahead of the horse. But Phil's point is excellent. If you're going to make trade deadline moves, and again, that's too far in the future, but you do have to keep an eye towards planning. And forget about Stidham and Hoyer. If Cam Newton can play at this level, you have to start thinking about, okay, how long can this sustain, and do we want him and do we need him? And they did it with Stephon Gilmore ahead of what they normally will schedule. 2 years out, gave him a $5 million raise. Whether he was, you know, banging his cup on the table and asking for more or not, we don't know. But it buys goodwill. It inevitably buys goodwill. All right, so let's put that in a small box and up on the shelf for now, the Cam Newton contract conversation. We'll revisit. You have to revisit. It's critical. And God, I mean, I spent 3 years talking Tom Brady contract. I'm not out of that business forever. And speaking of which, we'll get to Rick Stroud on Brady. He's excellent. You're going to enjoy the hell out of it in just a few minutes. But you did your report card, Phil. Why did the Patriots running game stutter on Sunday night?
I think it was a variety of reasons. But the two that I think we can point to are, number one, this defense that they went up against was clearly focused on stopping that aspect of the Patriots attack. I mean, they go for 200 plus yards the other day. Their front seven is such that they've got, you know, they've got three deep defensive backs. And then you can almost, in this defense, especially playing against the Patriots in week two of the 2020 season, you can commit basically everybody else to the run. It's eight bodies in the box. And they saw that at times. So that was number one. I think that the Seahawks were just focused on taking it away. And I think it's why it was so important for the Patriots to show that they can throw. Right. So now they have two games on their record. And while neither one was very balanced, you put them together and they've shown a balanced attack. So teams have to be ready for both. So that's number one. Number two, Tom, for me, there's not a whole lot in terms of juice from this running back group making the first guy miss. And I've said that that's something that Sony Michel has struggled with for a couple of years. I was surprised Rex Burkhead struggled with it as much. He had nothing going in the running game either. So it wasn't like this was just a Sony Michel issue, but I think you could use a little bit more from your running backs. Was the offensive line great? No, but at some point, especially if you're facing heavier boxes, you got to make that first guy miss, because otherwise it could be a really long day. And it was, I mean, when the running backs carried, Tom, it was 14 carries for 20 yards. Mm. I mean, you can see why they ended up being so pass heavy based on those numbers.
I wonder, and this is next gen stats or PFF, how often first contact came behind the line of scrimmage or at it, because it seemed often. And also I wonder if JJ Taylor, who's going to be more sudden, and I have to see more from him as a running back to think whether Ivan Fears' lofty appraisal of him as being the next Deion Lewis is accurate. Can he make somebody miss in a phone booth or not? Sony Michel can't. His first cut is outstanding once he gets to the second level when he puts his foot in the ground, but he's not a magician the way a Deion Lewis or a Barry Sanders, and that's why Barry Sanders was the greatest ever, is he could do both plus a few other things, make you miss in a phone booth and also have that put your foot in the ground and move. You know who the best at ever a changing direction at full speed was, Phil?
Best ever a changing direction full speed. This is going to be a real random answer from you. It's going to be Dave Meggett.
A rental James Simpson.
Oh, wow.
You know, it's bad if you're trying to make it dramatic and say the guy's name and you misspeak his last name. But it's OJ, so I don't feel that bad. Phil, the run defense for the New England Patriots had its issues on Sunday. I thought some of that might have to do with the fact that now we're going to start to see the linebacker core get challenged. Not exposed, but challenged. And that's where the biggest turnover has been. Juwan Bentley is not anybody's idea of fill in your fast linebacker who just swallows people up here. So what are you seeing on that when you did your card?
He's not Deion Jones. He's not Corey Littleton. He's not, right, any of these guys.
Not Jamie Collins.
He's not Jamie Collins. He's not Dante Hightower. I mean, those guys are all better athletes, I would say. I'm not sure that the linebacker group was as bad as we thought. Listen, the front seven was not good. They gave up five plus yards per carry, and you throw in the Russell Wilson scrambles there. But the play that I think everybody's remembering with Juwan Bentley, because the spotlight was on him, he was the last line of defense. He's asked to go basically one-on-one with Russell Wilson in the open field when Russell Wilson, the C's part up front, and he scrambles right up the gut. And Juwan Bentley has no shot there. Ted Johnson, our middle linebacker, resident middle linebacker expert, Ted Johnson, we did that play on Monday Night Patriots. He said, I mean, Ray Lewis isn't tracking down Russell Wilson in that situation. So that's a tough spot for Juwan Bentley to find himself in. I think overall as a front, and this included the outside linebackers, guys like Chase Winovich, John Simon got used like a small forward trying to chase over the top of a screen at one play,
Wilson around. And that wasn't, I truly love John Simon. I think he is so underrated, but that is exactly what it was. Pick and roll, bullshit out top. And they were trying to get a switch. It was so funny to see that.
And Russell Wilson played it. I think John Simon actually played it pretty well. He tried to do his best. I mean, he was extending, basically setting his edge like outside, like almost to the numbers where the receivers are usually lined up. He was doing his part to try to contain Russell Wilson, but you're one-on-one in that spot with a guy who, as you've mentioned many times, is a salamander, and it's impossible. So I think they definitely could have been better. The linebacker group got a C from me, or a C+ on the report card. Let me check it here. I thought the defensive line really, though, the bigger guys, the defensive linemen, linebackers got a C+. Defensive line from me got a C-. Guys like Lawrence Guy, Byron Cowart, those are guys that really needed to be leaned on to crush the pocket around Russell Wilson. It's not a good offensive line that Seattle has. I thought they'd be able to do it better. They did not, and it kind of exposed what they have at linebacker because they weren't able to do their thing up front.
All right, Philly, great analysis of that. So now we've seen them run crazy on Miami. We've seen them throw crazy on Seattle, which both of those teams have weak spots there. Now they're going to go up against the Raiders team on Sunday at 1 p.m. Thank God, hate the late games. And they're going to face a team that is on a short week coming cross country, but also coming off a 34-24 win over an explosive Saints team. What are you looking for here?
I want to see if they can be more balanced in game. I honestly don't know enough about this Raiders defense right now, other than they are more Seattle than they are Miami up front. I think that's safe to say. They have guys that really want to get up the field. They have smaller defensive tackles that are really good pass rushers, Malik Collins, Mo Hurst, who's a local guy. Those guys like to get up the field, and they were able to do that against the Saints, and they pressured Drew Brees into a pretty big interception relatively early in that game, week two. So I would say if the Patriots are looking at this and they're looking at the film from week two and they're saying, man, the backs really couldn't get started. The running game wasn't there because this penetrating style really gave our offensive line fits. They're going to have to figure that out. And that could be an issue, but I don't know if there's anything in the secondary that Vegas has that would really worry me from a passing perspective. So maybe we end up seeing a similar game plan and a similar sort of box score as to what we saw week two.
Yeah. And it's really interesting because now we've all watched the Saints in two games, most likely because we watched them against Tampa. And now we watched them against Las Vegas. I love saying that. So we're going to get a sample now of how the Patriots fit in against a team that clearly is pretty capable, which they were a capable team last year, and they showed great resilience. They were all over the place in terms of travel, and they were winning games that they shouldn't have won. And then they just fell off. the absolute table and got their asses beat by Jacksonville, I think, in the finale. I want to change gears here because there's a lot of conversation about the fines that were handed down by the NFL for mask violations. Now, this is important to note as well. The NFL released its COVID results for the past week, September 13th to 19th. There were 36,664 tests administered to a total of 7,845 players and team personnel. See, I don't know if that stat's right, because the next one says 14,074 tests were administered to 2,438 players, 22,590 tests administered to 5,407 personnel. But the upshot is this, Phil. There were zero confirmed positive tests among players and five new confirmed positives among other personnel. So it's not running rampant through the league. And we know that the coaches are being tested daily. And we know that the players who are leaving the field are not masked up like the coaches are. So there's an incongruity that exists on the NFL sidelines when we flip out about coaches putting their masks down and we go to Twitter and say, oh, this guy's had his mask down. And we're watching a game where all the guys are running around with their masks down. It's not like they're going into Whole Foods, coughing and sneezing on everyone. They've been tested. So I put out a poll that said, mask scoff laws on NFL sidelines are being fined heavy by the league for their infractions. Your reaction is, first, they should be suspended. 3.8% of the votes. Good. Sends the right message. 49.8% of the votes. Hate it. It's all about optics. 38.7% of the votes. And finally, masks don't even work, bro. 7.5% of the 2,147 votes. Phil, to me, when you go over the top like this and just start paddling hands with rulers, you're insulting people's intelligence just a little bit about what they're watching. And I get what we're saying, and the majority of people in this poll are saying that it's good, it sends the right message. But I hate message sending because I don't think we're so dumb as a society that we can't tell the difference between an NFL sideline where all the guys are tested and the incongruity, as I said, of guys coming off the field with no mask talking to guys who are wearing a mask just for show. But I know you and I have divergent views on this, and I respect your views because of your perspective on this and your family situation too. So, and you got little kids, I don't. You have a wife who's in the medical field. You have parents who you interact with plenty. So you tell me where I'm not hearing it right.
Listen, I think if you can do your job while taking every precaution, why not? So that's my question. If you ask why, I would say why not? And I understand there's plenty of communication that has to happen and coaches are wearing their masks. And I'm sure that's what's going on. They feel like they're not communicating over the microphone. You get the Motorola headsets on, something gets lost in translation. Maybe you have a bad play and that's it. If you're Pete Carroll or Kyle Shanahan or whoever, strap on the old welder's mask. 100%. Why can Andy Reid do this and not feel self-conscious? Is it about look? Because nobody looks great with them on. Newsflash. Like, there's no way to make it look cool. Just if you're worried about the communication, just do the mask thing. And then you don't have to worry about the fines. And you don't have to worry about people getting on you if they're getting on you on social media or anywhere else. That's my thing, is it's a very simple thing to do. It's something that you can do without it impacting your job. And yes, they're tested, but we understand that the tests aren't perfect. We understand that taking every precaution can make a difference, even if it's a very, very small percentage of a difference. I think the message sending is certainly part of this here, and the NFL wants to be viewed as doing the right thing. And I think, honestly, I think that's important too, Tom, because I think people do, if it's resonating with anybody, and I doubt it is, maybe it's even just a couple people. But I think you give a large chunk of society more credit than I think they deserve in some places. To be quite honest with you, we're hearing about people that are, you know, got signs on their store saying, if you're wearing a mask, you are not allowed in my store. Like, right. There are people like this that we live with. And honestly, I don't think it's a bad thing to send that message if that is part of the equation.
My belief is that masking in or insisting on it or going crazy about it, making a big thing about it, when it is logically not a serious threat situation is counterintuitive and actually counterproductive, because it's going to cause people to say, what are we doing? And then that makes them anti-mask.
That's ridiculous, though. You can't, like, it's taking it too far on that side of it, in my opinion. Like, if you're looking at that and saying, what are we doing, and now I'm anti-mask because of that?
No. Here's what I'm doing. No, you're not going to be fully anti-mask. But I'm saying, look, I'm not a dummy. I'm not saying I'm the smartest guy in the world. But if I look at this and go, see, this is the shit I'm talking about, where we go so far about what things look like that it gets excessive. When people are outside and they're jogging and people are flipping out, where's your mask? It's illogical to need to wear them, except in instances where you cannot socially distance and you're in a group outside. Anyway, enough. Nobody needs to have mask talk. My wife is so sick of it. Like, we like to walk as you get a little older as a couple. And she will look at me just as we start to get out of the car and go, no COVID talk. No COVID talk. So enough.
Good for her.
But
don't you dare ruin her walk.
A lot of you people on Twitter and social media sometimes tell me, Phil, no Brady talk, okay?
No
more Brady talk.
But I think there's a lot of people out there, though, that like
you came to the wrong address if you want no Brady talk. Rick Stroud from the Tampa Bay Times covers the Tampa Bay Bradys. And he was kind enough to spend some time with us today on the phone. Well, on the Zoom, too, talking about Tom Brady, and this is great. How are the Bucs responding to Volcanic Tom? Here is Rick Stroud and his perspective. Just bring in Rick Stroud. And here is our guy, Rick Stroud, from the Tampa Bay Times. And, Rick, you have been covering this team for an awfully long time, and this is probably a unique season down there compared to anything you've experienced in Tampa.
Oh, yeah, we have six-time Super Bowl winning quarterbacks every day. They just don't do it here, and they don't win six. You know, you got your Steve Youngs and people like this. But no, it's look. It is a big story, maybe one of the biggest stories in the NFL. You know, week one was not as they had planned, to say the least. And you know, there was some fun reaction, I think, especially up that way with Bruce Arians kind of calling out Tom Brady, and then us asking him about that, and I don't think he really wanted to really, you know, deal with it. So it's been a process, and I think what you see on the field, and maybe get a little bit through the Zoom for whatever that's worth, is there's frustration there. You know, there's real frustration on Tom's part. Things are not the way he wants them to be, obviously, and I think you have to, you know, kind of revisit the whole decision not to come to Tampa, but you know, in addition to learning BA's language of his offense, does this offense, do they need to move it more towards Tom Brady as opposed to kind of being stuck in the middle? Because right now he looks like he's trying to run somebody else's offense.
Let's get into some of the X's and O's in a minute. I want to ask you, though, because it's so fascinating, his interactions with teammates because of who he is and what he's done and his expectation level. He got a little volcanic on the sidelines the other day. How are some of his teammates responding to it when he kind of goes tantrum mode?
Yeah, I think it's new to them. I mean, he was building them up in training camp. I think they saw a little bit of it, you know, but he was kind of using positive reinforcement. And now there's tantrum Tom. And that's an in-game different experience altogether. And it is a shock. And I've said this, you know, about guys playing here. Look, everybody wants to win, right, in the NFL. But here in Tampa Bay, where the sun's shining and there's palm trees, and you know, if we don't go to the playoffs, it's only 12 years in a row. No one really feels that gut punch when you lose. Well, now they're feeling it as they're losing, you know, when Tom Brady's on the field. And I think that's what the organization wanted him to bring. But it's you know, it's not fun at Berkeley Prep anymore in the summertime, right? This is real, and I think those guys, you know, I mean, they're going to find out he's not going to trust you if you don't match his intensity. And that's kind of what's going on right now.
It feels a little tight. I mean, yeah. From the outside looking in, he feels tight. I think Arians is in a unique spot as well, as to almost who's the alpha there. And it just, it looks tight.
Yeah, it looks tight because I think Tom is. And I think that, you know, never being on a field where they can tackle you, where, you know, forget about preseason. I mean, you just jump right into it. It was a weird atmosphere at the Superdome with no fans and almost virtually no noise. They did a bad job with that. So there was so much that was, you know, uncharted. I think it was a little better the second week. He was at his, quote, home stadium. He had at least been in Raymond James a few times. But yeah, I think tight's a good word. And I think you feel that from the quarterback. And until they can make him comfortable, and I don't know that he ever is really comfortable, but until he feels like, you know, what I'm doing makes me Tom Brady again, I think it's going to kind of be that way. And he's got to learn who to trust. And, you know, he hasn't had – Mike Evans was hurt the first week. Now Chris Godwin is out the second. So, you know, they're still kind of feeling their way that way. But, yeah, tight is a very good word.
Do they stay the course offensively and do what Bruce likes, or Rick, from your years covering, is it time to maybe start to reach across the aisle and do some of the Tom stuff?
Well, I think they have to. I think that, you know, Brady has met them about as far as he wants to. Maybe he'll go a little bit more, but I think he's looking for them to come to him now. I mean, they always said this is going to be a collaboration. And if they're here and he's here, he wants them to go that way.
Can you give it for instance?
Well, I mean, just, you know, so much of what they do is down the field, right? I think you saw him get the running backs more involved. I mean, Tom sees the game a certain way that, you know, he reacts to the defense, right? What is the defense doing? And they always have game plans and things like that. But there's no doubt that Bruce Arians wants to push the ball down the field. Well, that means holding on to it. You know, that means, you know, whether your offensive line can hold up, which they didn't against the Saints. So I think Brady just, you know, calls a game a different way. I mean, Byron Leftwich is only in his second year as a coordinator. Mm-hmm. There has to be more synergy there. And right now there's just not. And so I think Brady would like them to move more towards what he has done with these players and still, you know, kind of keep some of BA's philosophies. But they really are a little bit apart. And this was always going to be hard. And it's actually harder, I think, than what they anticipated.
Watching LeSean McCoy last week, he really looked like, I mean, he might have a massive season. He might have an 80 catch season. I mean, it just, he gets, it seems to me, what the concept is that Brady wants to do. And he absolutely still has plenty of shiftiness after the catch. Your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think LeSean will be a big help. I think he trusts him. You know, LeSean's caught 40, 50 balls like 8 times in his career. And he could do that again for him. He seems to be kind of their receiving back, if you will. Ronald Jones is kind of like their opener, to use a Rays phrase. And then Leonard Fournette, I mean, he's, you know, right now he's sort of Mariano Rivera. I mean, if they can hand him the ball with the lead, he's going to pop it up in there and he can catch the ball. But I think he likes throwing it to Shady. I mean, that's what he's looking for. He's looking for a guy he can get the ball to quickly in space. He can make somebody miss and make yards and keep the ball rolling. And, you know, second and 8 is not a good down. You know, first, you know, second and 9. I mean, that's what they were in New Orleans all the time. And so I think Tom wants to utilize those guys a little bit. It's a committee. So, yeah, LeSean McCoy, I think he's a big fan of.
All right, then. That brings us to number 87. How's our little Gronky doing? I have a theory. Let me tell you my theory before we hit your appraisal from there. It's not physical. It's mental. I think that he has had such a mental battle with his body and playing football and taking hits that now he finds himself back in something that he was really happy to get himself out of. So I'm seeing it as mental, and almost there is extreme trepidation. What are you seeing, Rick?
Well, he's not playing well. And the reasons for that could be many, right? I mean, it's hard. As you know, Tom, once you put those keys on the table in the National Football League, it's hard to pick them up again, especially after a year. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he looks good, but it's a guy that's had, what, 18, 20 surgeries. I don't know what it is at this point. But he's not running fast. He didn't block particularly well week one. And the fact of the matter is, even though he's gone out for like 30-something passes, he's only had four targets. Now, you would think that if Tom Brady's going to throw the ball to somebody, it's going to be Gronkowski. So what does that say? Well, I don't think the defenses are doubling him, okay? I don't think they're, like, rolling to his side necessarily. I just don't think he's getting separation. I don't think he's making himself available. And then when they do throw it to him, you know, not much has happened. So, I'm curious about where this is going to go with Gronk because he's playing a lot. Like he's not, you know, Cameron Brate had like six snaps the other day. They're playing him and O.J. Howard almost exclusively. I don't know. I mean, we know that Brady had a big influence on him coming back. So you do. You know him better than I do. It's a good question of whether the will is there or the skill at this point.
It's going to be an interesting push-pull again between the coaching staff and perhaps Brady if Arians at some point says, why am I putting Cameron Brate on ice for Gronk? Am I just doing it for Tom if he's ineffective? I mean, and what would Tom's response be? See, those are the problems you encounter with a guy like Brady when you roll out the red carpet and then he brings someone with him, I would suppose, Rick.
Yeah, I think that's true. And yet the other day, you know, and this is true as well. And this is what I'm talking about, the meeting of the minds here is that in Bruce Arians' offense, the tight end has never been a big component of the passing game. You'll get the one-off down the field, seam route, the over routes, things like that. But for the most part, everything runs through your outside receiver, your slot receiver, and they'll go three wide and that sort of thing. And Bruce said the other day, he goes, look, we don't throw 50 passes a game to our tight end. Well, no, you've thrown four. You know, you've thrown four to Gronkowski. So you would think that as Tom tries to get a little more hold of the wheel here, that he would want to reward Gronk for coming out of retirement and feels comfortable throwing the ball to him. But what are we designing for him? You know, that goes back to Byron Leftwich. You know, how are we getting these guys involved? Are they just going to block on the edge? Is that what we want them to do? Well, I'm not sure Gronk would have come back, you know, to be a run blocker 55 out of 60 plays. So, right. You know, that's something that that's part of that collaboration that hasn't taken place.
All right, let's put a bow on it. What are you looking for this week from the Buccaneers and Brady?
Well, I mean, they got to go to Denver and win. I think at this point, winning is the thing. That's why he's here. And they got to find a way to keep winning. Their defense is going to carry them, Tom. They have a very good defense. Drew Lock's out. I mean, you know, Denver's all beat up. But it's a road game, and it's a tough place to play, even though there's no fans. So they just got to take baby steps. And, you know, here's what the coaches tell me. Will they turn the corner this week? Will it be this month? Will it even be this year? They don't know. They don't know when this is all going to, you know, sort of click. And and so that's just another week to try to make it work.
All right. It's our guy on the ground in Tampa Bay. It's Rick Stroud from the Tampa Bay Times. Thank you so much for the time, my friend.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
All right. Obviously, that was just me with Rick because that was earlier today. And this is actually Phil's day off. And he bangs out the pot on Tuesday, even though he's supposed to be off. But
I'm in my casual gear. You can see if you're watching on the YouTube, I'm very casual today.
Looking for some gear to buy. That is, of course, Tone Loke. Phil, we're going to be back on Thursday with Matt Castle, and we're going to hit all of it looking at the Raiders in that matchup. Anything else you need to say before departure?
No, I'm looking forward to talking to Castle. I think this matchup's going to be more interesting than we thought it was going into the season. We look at the Vegas Raiders, you say, Vegas, really? And yet here they are, 2-0, just coming off a win over the Saints, and this whole week just got a lot more interesting. Yeah, so tune into that one.
Darren Wawa, he's a load to deal with. See you Thursday.